But Martin, Sebastian, thank you so much for being with us. Just describe to our viewers what happened.
I came out of the parliament. It was not in session, but we had a meeting on the chamber for budget and finance. And as always, I took the tram. And the tram stopped one station before main station. Mm-hmm. And they said, everybody go out. There's an emergency going on, and you have to walk there by foot. So as I came there, I saw the emergency unit arriving, a lot of firefighters and ambulances. And all of a sudden, there are a few police vehicles arriving with high speed. And so I grabbed my stuff and go right the other direction.
So were you given any details? Have you sort of gleaned any details about the actual attack itself, about the actual axe attack?
I have read things on Twitter. I don't know if they are true. I don't have a confirmation from official accounts like the police or the firefighter units that there has been an arrest. Mm-hmm. I don't know if it's one attacker. I don't know if there are other. All I can say is I picked up a colleague of mine who saw my Twitter posting, and I drive them to the next main station in the city not far away from Düsseldorf so he can make his way home. Mm-hmm. And the police were searching for another attacker. That's all I heard, and that's all what we heard over Twitter and over the radio, that there's investigation going on and that there's maybe more than one attacker, but this information is also not confirmed.
So, you know, we know that one person was arrested. I want to make it clear to our viewers, we don't know the motive. We haven't been told anything about a motive from police. But just tell us, Martin, I mean, how on edge is Germany, given the fact that we have seen these sorts of attacks in the recent past?
Yes, of course, the Berlin attack, it was really shocking because it was the first time a major attack happened in Germany with death tolls and all the other stuff. And but it's not that we're very alarmed and we're on the edge. There had been some big events in Cologne and also Düsseldorf called Carnival. It was a big festival with millions of visitors. So there was a little bit, we were a little bit edgy. It was a lot more police than in the last years. But I would say, I would describe the feeling most of the people are acting normal. They're not anxious or something like this.
And just to recap to our viewers, we don't really know anything about a motive as of yet. We do know that one person has been arrested. No word on any sort of fatalities, but there have been people injured. Martin, Sebastian, Abel, thank you so much for sharing your story with us. Thank you. Appreciate that.
And yes, folks, the madness continues. They don't even have a motive for this action that took place in Düsseldorf. Only thing I can say to all of meine Freunde in Deutschland, bitte passen Sie auf. Das sind verrückte Leute überall. These are different times. And you're listening to Views with a Twist from Complaint Department. My name is DDR. We're on your iTunes, your Android, your iOS, Podomatic.com. At writerscafe.org, powerquant@your-poetry.com. We're on Pinterest and SoundCloud. I gotta tell you, folks, it's just everywhere. It doesn't make a difference where you go. The crazies are out there. It's in the air. You know what I mean? It's just, what are you gonna do? You have to really be on your toes. There was just a 80-year-old guy just the other day here in New York that got beat up for no reason. For absolutely no reason. It's crazy. Anyway, sit back, relax, and enjoy.
So get this. There's more than 3.2 million people in New York City that were born outside of the United States. Oh, that makes New York City, by a wide margin, the city with the most foreign-born people of any other city in the world. I'm Jared Thorpe. I'm a National Geographic fellow, and I'm a data artist. And what that means is that I try to take data and put it into a context that you might not expect. So that could mean turning it into a series of shapes, or a series of colors, or a series of different types of designs. So this piece is called We Were Strangers Once Too, and what it is it's 33 metal poles that are inscribed with the immigration statistics for New York City. So what it represents is 3.2 million people in New York City that are foreign-born. They were born outside of the United States. Every 1,000 of those people is represented by an inch of paint on these poles. As you approach the front of the sculpture, we've positioned all the color blocks perfectly so that they form a heart. And so we wanted to put this right in the center of the city as a statement to say that the beating heart of this city are immigrants, and also to show the incredible diversity of the immigrant population in New York City. More than any other city in the world, this one is built by immigrants. The original name for the city was New Amsterdam. It had new in the name. It still has new in the name. So this city is nothing without immigrants. It's what we are as New Yorkers.
And that is so true, folks. New York is most definitely the land or the city of immigrants. And, you know, I'm proud of it. You know, I'm proud that we're such a diverse city and that there are so many cultures. Sometimes it gets on your nerves, you know, depending on where you're at. I'm just being honest. You know, but, you know, we just, it's very important for us to realize that immigrants have built this country. And for some orange-haired, orange-faced dude to come along and talk about, okay, we're going to build a wall and we're going to ban people from these countries and blah, 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 blah. I mean, I understand what he's trying to say. I'm going to say it again. I understand that the man wants to protect our country. I understand that. I get it. You just can't, though, exclude people. Because this is a country that has grown because of its diversity. So if you just start excluding people, if you just start saying, okay, well, you know, you can't come in and you can't come in and yada, 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 you know, what you're going to do is you're just going to, you know, you're going to create havoc. And you're going to have a country that's going to revert back to the days of... maybe even before Jim Crow. You know what I mean? And I don't know, man. We'll see what happens. But, you know, he's talking about building this wall. And, yeah. And I really don't want to talk about him. But, you know, I do want to say that, you know, it makes me proud to be a New Yorker to know that we are such a diverse city. The most diverse city, most likely, in the world. And it's just great to live in a place like that. It has its ups and downs, of course it does. But it's important that we remain a diverse city and that we remain a diverse country. Okay, so you're listening to Views with a Twist. My name is JDR. And I shall return. Baby, run! How you walk, wiggle, rock, baby, work, baby, twerk, baby, walk, baby, drop, baby, work, baby, twerk. You wiggle, rock, baby, drop, baby, work, baby, twerk, baby, walk, baby, drop, baby. Let me see you pop. How you wiggle, wiggle, rock, baby. Let me see you pop. How you wiggle, wiggle, rock, baby. Let me see you pop. How you wiggle, 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 wiggle. Don't stop, baby. Let me see you wiggle, rock. You don't stop. Girl, let me see you wiggle, rock. Oh.
You know, when I thought the Beatles were in trouble, too, because in every album, even like Magical Mystery Tour, everybody was sort of in the same place, even fashion-wise. And then all of a sudden I saw you guys all looking different. And I said, oh, maybe that's the thing. But I always thought the Stones, you bring up Mick Jagger, I always think of the Stones, I mean, they're great. It's a songwriter, you know, Mick and Keith. But when you guys came out with a Sgt. Pepper's kind of thing, the next thing you know, Mick and the guys were dressed as wizards, and you know, on their album, or you'd have Beggar's Banquet come out around the same time that you guys were doing Magical Mystery Tour. Yeah. It seemed like they were not only competing with you, but following you.
Well, that is the truth, you know. I mean, and I don't kind of try and rub it in because I know the guys. I don't want to rub it in too much. If you're listening, Mick or Keith,
they're listening.
But, however. Yeah, you look at the history of it all. The Beatles come to America. A year later, the Stones come to America. We wrote their first single, I Want to Be Your Man. They didn't have a single. They couldn't get one together. So we like wrote them one, you know. As you say, then we'd make this record. They'd come out with this. We'd go psychedelic. They'd go psychedelic and dressed as wizards.
And a lot of pictures I see.
Those were the days, baby.
But
a lot let's all dress as wizards now.
But a lot of people are.
Thank God you guys didn't do some of that stuff, because you see people walking around now still trapped.
I know.
But a lot of the pictures I see,
Mick Jagger
is sitting there in the studio with you guys at the mixing board.
Is he?
Yeah, you know, we were very good friends. I mean, we still are, but we hung out quite a bit then. We all lived in London. They'd moved not too far. They lived just outside, and we'd moved from Liverpool. So there was a scene, and we would bump into each other quite a lot, you know.
I remember even, I don't know if you said it or not, but your 2011 solo tour, when you went out on tour, and you made something like $40 million, and then all of a sudden the Stones went back out on tour, and you kind of felt like, hey, wait a second, again, I'm inspiring the Stones. They're seeing that at my age, I can go out on tour and make a fortune. And they're going out now and making a fortune.
Well, maybe, you know, I don't know. You know, and we all look at each other, so maybe that happened. I wouldn't, I don't know. You'd have to ask.
Do you get together with those guys? Or I mean,
yeah, occasionally,
socially, where would you go with them?
But, you know, the main one was I was on holiday in the Caribbean, and Keith had a house just down the beach from where I was staying. So I went every afternoon of that holiday over to hang with Keith. And it was great. We were saying, you know what, man? We've known each other 40 years, and we've never had time to hang.
And that was Howard Stern interviewing Paul McCartney. You know, I find it quite an interesting thing, because I was just doing a class of a rock and roll history at my college. And there are a lot of similarities. There are a lot of things that sort of happened, as you heard Paul McCartney explain here, that they would do something like they came to America and then all of a sudden the Rolling Stones come to America and they did a certain album and then the Rolling Stones kind of almost copied them in a way, and they were always kind of influencing the Rolling Stones. And, you know, I mean, the Stones had a lot of influences, blues influences, especially blues influences, if you ask Mick Jagger. And I can see where a band like the Beatles would influence a band like the Rolling Stones. I can see that, you know. And it's good to hear that they're good friends and, you know, they hang out every now and then. And, you know, I didn't want to play the whole thing because it goes on forever. Because, you know, Howard Stern does these long interviews. He's really great at it. But it's nice to hear. And the fact that both Paul McCartney and the Rolling Stones are still kicking it is just something amazing. You know, there's a lot of guys out there that are still kicking it. Billy Joel. I mean, Roger Waters has come in. You know, and there's a lot of other bands. There's a lot of other bands from way back. Like, I don't even know if Blue Oyster Cult is still touring, but they were touring for a while, too. And I was like, what? Blue Oyster Cult, are you kidding me? I mean, Axl Rose, you know, Guns N' Roses, you know. So these guys are, you know, they're gonna rock till they drop. You know what I mean? So you're listening to Views with a Twist. My name is JD on your iTunes, your Android, your iOS. Podomatic.com, John Robinson at writerscafe.org. Tawa Kwan at your-poetry.com. We're on SoundCloud and Pinterest. And I shall return.
New at 10, it's a heartbreaking picture circulating social media of an airman placing an American flag over his loyal bomb-sniffing dog he had to put down. And tonight we've learned he grew up in Gastonia. Anchor Scott Wickersham just spoke to him in the last 3 hours.
Yeah, tonight Air Force Staff Sergeant Kyle Smith spoke to me on Skype. He's in Fort Bliss in El Paso tonight. He shared pictures of their time in the service together. He says he misses his partner, but is thankful for the time they had together after the dog retired and became just a pet and a friend.
This image is powerful. Sorrow, the loss of the unspoken bond between a man and his dog who both served our country.
He was just goofy, like he liked running around and just being a dog.
Canine Badza was paired with Staff Sergeant Smith, who grew up in Gastonia during 4 deployments and for security for many officials. When Badza was retired in 2014, Smith took him as a pet. But in the past few months, Badza became ill, was in pain and suffering, and had to be put down. Smith gave his pal a last meal at McDonald's.
He got a Big Mac, which, by the way, he didn't leave a crumb.
And when the end finally came, Smith was right there by his side.
And I just hugged him. I told him I loved him a lot, and I said, you know, I'm going to miss you.
And when a fellow military canine trainer draped this flag over Badza, it meant a lot to Smith as he gave his friend one last hug in this photo.
Why do you think that image resonated so much with people and went viral?
He, just as much a part of as I am, was a part of the Air Force, and everything that he did, I wouldn't have been able to do the mission I did with him or his previous handlers without him there.
Smith told me Badza never really got a proper send-off from the military, and it feels like that last photo of him and his partner that went viral, touching so many, has more than made up for all of that. Allison?
Remember General Michael Flynn? General Michael Flynn was a foreign agent. The president's first national security advisor who lied to the vice president about his conversations with Russian leaders and was forced to resign after 24 days on the job was also working to help the Turkish leader as a lobbyist during the U.S. presidential campaign. Michael Flynn now admits he was working to help Recep Erdogan, the authoritarian Turkish president, during the run-up to the United States election. Got $500,000 while, among other things, writing an op-ed for The Hill saying how great Erdogan was and how awful a Turkish dissident was, backed by the United States. And he did that while we were deciding who would be our next president. And while he, the former Army Lieutenant General and intelligence chief, was on the campaign trail with Donald Trump, complaining about pay for play, as he was paid to play by a businessman in support of the Turkish leader whose voting base is Islamic voters.
Lock her up. That's right. Yes, that's right. Lock her up.
He chanted about Hillary Clinton. Lock her up. Before he was on the Trump transition team and before he became the national security advisor, Mike Flynn registered as a foreign agent, not before he became one last year, but night before last, retroactively. And now the man who paid him is actually asking for his $500,000 back. Let's bring in Julie Bykowitz, the White House reporter for the Associated Press, who worked on this story for AP, which broke the news. Julie, the White House said, he was a private citizen at the time. But there's been a lot of lying, Julie. And well, there's been a lot of lying. There's been lying about who you talk to, and by lots of people. And almost inevitably and invariably, they were lying about talking to the Russians about something. It's too much lying and too much Russia and too much smoke. And now they're investigating. Where are we in this thing?
Well, with regard to Mike Flynn, the big news out of today was, and it was rather surprising to hear White House Press Secretary Sean Spicer say that the White House wasn't aware during its vetting process of Mike Flynn that he had done work that could be construed as for the Turkish government. You would think that the White House would, in the course of vetting someone for such an important job, come across that information, but it appears that they did not. So that really made me remember when Flynn left his post, when he was fired, it turns out, that Spicer was saying that there were other things than what he ostensibly just fired for. And we always sort of wondered what that was all about. We're not getting a lot of answers out of the White House, but that this whole episode with the Turkish government could be one more thing that the White House was concerned about when they let him go.
The president, as far as I can tell, hasn't answered questions on anything from reporters since this Russia story began building. He said Russia is a ruse, that it's all fake news, but that the leaks are real, something that really can't live together.
Well, it's all gotten pretty confusing, and I really sort of feel for people trying to follow along at home because, you know, on the one hand, you've got intelligence officials saying, you know, we didn't see anything to indicate that the Trump campaign was working in collusion with Russia. We didn't see evidence that's just coming out today that any advisors were sort of directly working for Russia. But then on the other hand, you have the president himself sort of raising this issue again over the weekend, talking about how he felt that President Obama had wiretapped Trump Tower. So it's just a lot to digest, not a lot of clear answers at this point, and not much clarity on when we'll get more information on any of this.
Are reporters still pressing the White House, pressuring the president and Sean Spicer and all the rest of them on this?
Every day. And at the last couple of press briefings, it's become very obvious that Sean Spicer and other, you know, White House officials that we speak with, they're having a difficult time sort of talking their way out of this situation because, again, there's just so little clarity when you've got sort of the president questioning intelligence officials on the one hand and then those same officials saying, hey, maybe there's nothing here.
Julie Bykowitz from Associated Press.
You know, I tell you, I agree with the reporter there at the end, the female correspondent. I'm confused. I mean, this whole cabinet confuses me. You know, it's bad enough that Trump confuses me, but the whole cabinet confuses me. And it all seems in a way like they're just trying to block the media, this is why they keep calling it, you know, everything fake news, and they're blocking the media from certain conferences and stuff like this. And it seems to me that they're trying to hide something. I don't know why I feel that way, but I just feel that there's something that is, they're just, they don't want the media to find out, you know. And I am actually anxious, not anxious, I wouldn't say anxious, but I'm curious to see what WikiLeaks will have coming out whenever they bring it out, because, you know, from what I understand, they want to bring out another few thousand emails and confidential reports pertaining to the Republican Party and to individuals in this administration. So I'm kind of curious to see what that's going to be all about, and what Trump's going to, well, I know what Trump's going to say about it. It's all fake news. It's not real. You know, he deflects. And that seems to be the mantra of the whole Republican Party. They deflect. They deflect everything. You don't really get straight answers out of them. They'll deflect. They'll curve. They'll go around. You know, you're not getting real straight answers out of them. And this is the reason why I kind of feel that they are hiding something. I'm not sure what it is, but believe you me, if it's true, you know, I mean, you know, it's just an assumption on my part. But if it was to be true, you know, we'll find out before the first 4 years are over, hopefully, you know. Anyway, you're listening to Views with a Twist. My name is GDR on your iTunes, your Android, iOS, Podomatic.com, John Robinson at writerscafe.org, Talaquan at your-poetry.com, we're on SoundCloud and Pinterest. Let me give my shout-outs to the NYPD, the FDNY, the ASPCA, and North Shore Animal League, SOS Wildlife of India, all first responders and animal caretakers. I'm on the front end, Deutschland, and everybody that listens to me. Last week I had a big high rating. I don't understand where that came from, because I don't even think I put the show on Podomatic.com. I think I just put it on SoundCloud and sent it to Twitter, so I don't even know what's going on there. But, you know, hey, I'm not complaining. Anyway, listen, there's still a bit of show left, a good 20 minutes or so. So just hang back and relax and get some popcorn or something. All right. I may be back, I may not. Okay.
I work at a nightclub. Work at a nightclub. A lot of Middle Eastern dudes at this nightclub. And they all smoke cigarettes indoors. Like they just... So this dude was smoking a cigarette indoors, and my boss is like, yo, Paul, you're Middle Eastern. Tell the dude to put out the cigarette. Like he thought we had a connection and we'd make out or some shit. I don't know. He's just... But think about Middle Eastern people. They use their language barrier to get themselves out of problems. They do it all the time. So I go up to the dude smoking a cigarette. I'm like, hey, man, you can't smoke cigarettes in the club. The guy's like, yes, yes, cigarette. I'm like, no, sir, you can't smoke cigarettes in the club. It's illegal. You got to smoke outside. Yes, yes, outside. Yes, smoke. Yes, it's a nice club, isn't it? I'm like, no, sir, I know the ambience is great, but you can't smoke cigarettes in here. You have to actually put it out and go outside. Oh, you want a cigarette? Hey, give him a cigarette. But by the time we're done having a conversation, he smoked his cigarette, you know, so he got over on me. A Middle Eastern dude would be the worst person behind the counter to rob a bank from, because he just used that shit, you know what I mean? A dude would walk into a bank like, all right, if you move, you die. Hey, man, give me all your money. Dude's like, yes, money, yes. Brother, I don't think you understand. I got a loaded weapon. I need the money now. Yes, yes, it's hard. Yes, money. Money is difficult, yes, yes. He goes, man, if you don't put this money in the bag, I'm going to kill you. Oh, yes, you want a cigarette? Hey, give him a cigarette. You want to smoke? But by the time they're done having a conversation, he's arrested. You know what I'm saying? It's just... My dad does the same thing to me. But he doesn't... He does the same thing to me. But he doesn't do it to, like, get out of situations. He does it to, like, insult me. You know? Like, I was just on a TV show, And I call my dad. I'm like, hey, Dad, I'm be on TV tonight. He goes, yes, you dropped out of college, yes. Yes, yes. Very good, yes. I'm like, no, Dad, I'm going to be on a television show at 10 o'clock. Can you watch it? Yes, yes, you disappoint me. Yes, I understand. Jesus. You want cigarette? It's just... Yo, my name is Paul. You guys have been great. Keep it going for your host.
Trump was campaigning to be president. One talking point that he had, and he was very consistent about it, was his priority of helping veterans. He was angry at how veterans were treated in the healthcare system, and so he wanted to prioritize helping them as much as possible. Now, fast forward to Trump's administration, where Trump is president, and he's singing a different tune, and it seems as though he has no interest in even meeting with vets. In fact, since he got elected, he has not met with veterans a single time. And now vets are starting to get really upset about it. Now, apparently there was a meeting just this week with vets in the White House, and they thought that there was a huge possibility that they would finally get a face-to-face meeting with the president, and that didn't happen. So Tuesday's meeting, which was first reported by the Military Times, included Veterans Affairs Secretary David Shulkin, former apprentice contestant Omarosa Manigault, and a handful of White House staffers. Several attending the meeting said they fully expected they would have met with Trump by this point in the administration. Trump himself has still not met face-to-face with veterans groups since he was elected president.
Okay, let's pause here. Now, and I think you're being a little fair. I mean, the veterans, after their all their sacrifice, and you know, there's some of them lost limbs, you know, traumatic brain injuries, they lost their friends. At least they got Omarosa.
They got Omarosa. And look, to be fair to Trump, he is president, and the president has very important meetings to attend. So some of those meetings on that day, while the vets were in the White House, Trump was meeting with senators in the White House. I'm sorry, tourists in the White House basement, leaders of the AFL-CIO, and also the Boy Scouts.
Hmm.
Huh? So, you know, meeting with the Boy Scouts is way more important than meeting with the vets that you prioritized in your campaign.
Remember that big event that he did when he ran away from the Megyn Kelly debate?
Yeah.
When he was a coward, and then he said, oh yeah, I'm going to do an event for veterans. They raise money for veterans. So he surrounded himself with veterans when he was running.
Yes.
Now that he won, I'm done with you guys. Here, send in some reality show contestant to deal with them.
So they're legitimately upset, and I'll give you some of the quotes from these vets in just a second. But for anyone who is a vet, and first of all, thank you for your service. But if you are a vet and you decided to vote for Trump, I need to know whether or not you're genuinely surprised that he doesn't respect you and never has. I mean, while he was campaigning and pretending like he cared about you, he talked about how John McCain is a loser because he was a prisoner of war. He was very foul-mouthed and unsavory to Khizr Khan, who lost his son as he was in the military. I mean, he never respected you, and he was actually pretty transparent about it. So when they tell me that, oh, well, we voted for Trump because he was telling it like it is. Yeah, he told it like it is. It's just that you ignored that part and decided to listen to the lies where he pretended like he cared about you and would do something for you if you got elected.
So he said, I prefer people who weren't captured. That's unbelievable, referring to John McCain. But look, guys, everything he says is a lie. I don't know when you're going to finally acknowledge that. So he said, oh, the generals, they're the worst. We're not winning with the generals, right? Then what did he do? He got into office, surrounded himself with generals. And he said, go Goldman Sachs and the global financial interests, they're terrible. Got an office, he broke records for how many Goldman Sachs guys are in his administration. He's got five guys from Goldman Sachs, including the president of Goldman Sachs in his administration. And then he's, oh, veterans, I love the veterans. As soon as he's in office, I don't need the veterans. They didn't donate to me at all. It was just a campaign prop. I'm done with him, right? When are you gonna get it? In fact, one of his own friends said he's a pathological liar. He's like, I like the guy, he's fun, but we know he just lies all the time. That's just Donnie.
It's insane. Okay, so let's hear from the vets and how they feel about Trump and his new position as president. One individual says, I won't say anyone told us we were meeting with the president, but it was implied that we would be able to voice our concerns to the boss, the guy who ultimately runs everything, which is the president. Now, they also described the ongoing efforts by veterans groups to meet directly with the president since he was elected as a fruitless effort that has left them feeling completely rebuffed by the White House. Another veteran with American Legion, actually he's the American Legion executive director, Verna Jones, he says, President Trump ran a campaign on helping veterans. When you look at who he has met with since winning, he has to make sure to make veterans a priority still.
Oh my God. So, you know, this is a trick he's done before. Hey, remember, of course, famously at Trump University, guys, you get to meet Trump if you pay $35,000 for this nonsense degree that's not a real degree from a non-real university. Mm-hmm. And it turns out when they came to meet Trump, they had a cardboard cutout of Trump. Oh my God, right? This is the kind of scam artist he is.
I know, but he's busy. He's meeting with the Boy Scouts.
So, and tourists, random tourists in the basement. And so this is the second time he sent in Omarosa to meet with veterans.
Yes.
Like, I thought, like, wait, is she a veteran or something? Why does he keep sending her in?
No, no, of course she's not. Of course she's not. So she was a chaplain for the military guard or something like that. Something ridiculous. And by the way, the vets themselves have showed that they're a little upset about that as well. In fact, in the first meeting with Omarosa, afterwards, one of the attendees, a veteran who wished to remain anonymous, said the following. When Omarosa was introduced, the room collectively gasped. There were people there missing limbs, and she was once a chaplain with the militia. Another in attendance said, there was an obvious disconnect between that transition team and, at that point, New York.
So these guys were ready to give their lives and a lot of times gave their limbs for the war. And they're like, on the upside, you get a reality contestant. And if you guys are really good, next meeting, you might even get Khloe Kardashian.
You know who's going to stop Trump, stop the establishment, stop the corruption? You are. You help us hire new investigative reporters, and we will unleash it on them. TYTnetwork.com/go. Let's build the best journalism team in America.
I got to tell you, folks, I was absolutely unaware of that. I was unaware of the fact that Trump has not met with any veterans since he has been president. And granted, you know, as a president, especially in the first 50 days, you have a lot to do. And especially if you're Donald Trump, because he just likes being in the limelight and in the spotlight. So it's not just the presidential duties that he's taking care of. He's still out there campaigning and trying to get as many more people on his side because he did lose the popular vote. Now, but the fact that he has not even mentioned veterans since he has taken office is kind of strange to me. I mean, you know, all this talk about helping the veterans and changing things. Now, I was just at the VA last week. It was last week, yeah. No, actually, it was the week before. And I spoke to a couple of the doctors that have admitted that there are weird changes taking place in the Veterans Administration. Are they good? Are they bad? You know, no one wanted to really comment, but there are some changes taking place, but I haven't heard of anything special in the way of helping out veterans with benefits, and especially medical and you know, healthcare. So you know, maybe he's working on it. You know, you want to give him the benefit of the doubt. You want to give him a chance, and you know, I don't know. Other than that, folks, last night someone breached the White House. That's right, last night around 11:30. Someone got into the White House. They were accosted, but from what I understand, they got pretty far. Listen up. And if I'm not back, I hope to see you on the radio next week. Yeah, I did steal that. I stole that. But listen.
What it appears happened here is that a man gained entrance to the White House security perimeter at around 11:38 Friday night. And actually made quite a bit of progress into the White House perimeter before finally being captured there by the South Portico entrance, which is on the backside of the White House. This is a pretty familiar entrance to the White House. This is, of course, the entrance that the president would enter and exit from when he's leaving on a trip to get onto Marine One before heading to Joint Base Andrews. It's also a place where the president will regularly greet foreign visitors and people that are coming to the White House. They'll bring their motorcade up on that driveway that enters right through the South Portico. You mentioned the security at that time. It was raised to the orange level, which is one of the highest security levels before the situation was brought under control and this man was put under arrest. We're told that the president was in the residence at the time. The suspect could have been only a few hundred yards away from the president at that time, but the president was never in any danger. He was made aware of the situation as soon as the Secret Service could provide him those details. And as we said, the president was not harmed. So this individual is under arrest right now. We're still awaiting an official statement from the Secret Service regarding this incident so that we can learn more information. But as of now, security at the White House is back to its normal level after being at that orange level overnight.
Good morning. Welcome back to Breakfast Television 7:45. Thanks for starting your day with us. Lana Hughes from the Winnipeg Humane Society joining us with Cuddles here, who looks like she wants to do anything but right
this
now.
This is Cuddles,
very
yeah.
exciting environment, though. Tell us a little bit about her, first of all. She's up for adoption?
Yeah, she's up for adoption at the Winnipeg Humane Society. She's just over 8 years old.
She's a big girl.
She's a big girl. She's been with us just under a month, so she's looking for a nice home.
So was she surrendered to you? Or
yeah, she surrendered to us. Okay. I think it was just her owner wasn't able to take care of her anymore, Aww. So now she's looking for a new home, but she's a really sweet girl. She's
Cuddles.
Really roly-poly and cuddly, as her name might suggest, and she's yeah. actually declawed.
Which is what we're going to talk about today, because yeah. the Winnipeg Humane Society is strongly against that.
That's right. Declawing is a very painful surgery for cats. So not only is the surgery painful, but the recovery process is quite painful.
Because you're saying when they actually do it, they're removing a joint in their foot?
Yeah, it's almost the equivalent of removing the first joint in a human finger. So it's very painful for the cat, and it actually takes away their natural defense system, so it can be quite stressful for them as well.
So it can lead to a number of issues. Yeah. Physically, the way in which they walk or carry themselves could change?
That's right. They might start to put the weight on their hindquarters instead of their front quarters, which could cause arthritis issues, joint and hip issues along the road. So it's just bad news all around.
And you mentioned the stressed and anxious, and that's because you're taking away their main defense mechanism.
That's right. And it's also a release for them. So when a cat wakes up from a nice long nap, they like to stretch out, get those claws out, and it feels really good for them. So right. when they don't have the claws, that can really bother them.
And it can also change the way they use their litter box?
That's true, yeah. Sometimes they have the association of the claws going in the litter, and if that's painful for them, they might stop using the litter box, so they'll start using your house as a litter box, which is never a good idea.
No, not at all. Okay, so the Winnipeg Humane Society does not support declawing at all, and you had said that there was a vet in Brandon that actually said they will not do it anymore.
Yeah, I believe they're the first vet clinic in Manitoba to outright say they are not doing declawing surgeries anymore.
That's great, because yeah. there are so many options out there, and you brought just a few for us here. Where do you want to start?
Let's start with the scratching posts.
This one here.
Okay. Yeah, the thing with scratching posts is it's not really a one-size-fits-all kind of thing. As we all know, cats all have their distinct personalities and quirks, so you want to observe where the cat is scratching in your home, what kind of furniture they like to scratch, and you can mimic the texture and the shape with different kinds of scratching posts. So this one's more of a carpet style. This one has a cardboard feel, which is nice in their nails.
And this one you can actually entice. There's a little bit of catnip, yeah. so you sprinkle it on there, yeah. and then they'll be a little bit more drawn to that.
So if the cat is not too keen on using the scratching post right away, you can sprinkle some catnip or maybe give them some treats to encourage them to start using it.
Excellent. And then there's always the caps, which we've seen before. These ones here that actually kind of just slide over top of the nails?
Yeah, you can put them over the nails. They last about 6 weeks or so, and that way they still have their claws. They're still able to stretch out, but without doing any damage to your furniture or to you.
Now with these though, we don't support cats being outside. They should not be roaming outside.
That's right, yeah.
But this can actually, these are not ideal for outdoor cats.
No, because when they are outdoors, you want to make sure they have their nails just because it is that defense mechanism for
right.
them.
That's yeah. all they have.
Yeah.
So great option for indoor cats though, and like Miss Cuddles here, who's looking for a home. You can find her at the Winnipeg Humane Society, 45 Hurst Way. Thank you so much, Lena.
Thank you.
Right now, we'll check in with Fiona filling in for Jenna.